This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Hi, I'm Jim McDavitt, a senior planner with the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Today, I'm here with Dennis Booz, the director of University Hospital's Center for Emergency Preparedness and Response, and Joe Grassi, the lead trainer for the Until Help Arrives program and Bleeding Control program. I'm going to hand it over to Dennis to give you a short bio on his background.
Thank you, Jim. As Jim mentioned, my name is Dennis Booz. I am the director of the University Hospital Center for Emergency Preparedness and Response. I've been an EMT in the state of New Jersey since 1989. Started my career in EMS in Newark, New Jersey at University Hospital in 1994, where I provided EMS services to the city of Newark. I also oversee the training division within EMS, and I currently oversee the Center for Emergency Preparedness and Response, which is a grant-funded program, as well as the University Hospital Community Training Center, which offers American Heart Association, ASHI, and emergency services type training, EMT training, so on and so forth.
Thanks, Dennis. Joe, why don't you provide a background on yourself?
Yeah, I've been an EMT since 1992. I started at University Hospital in 98. I've been there a little over 21 years. I started on the ambulance there and was quickly promoted to the rescue division. Did 15 or 16 years on a rescue truck. I do medical support for the Newark Police Department SWAT team. I do the training for the SEPR department now. It's been 2 years. I'm also a logs person for the New Jersey EMS Task Force.
Great. Thank you both for coming on today. I really want to get into the Until Help Arrives program and the Stop the Bleed training program as well. Why do these programs exist today?
So these programs exist as a result of trends that happen not only throughout New Jersey, but throughout the entire country. So as you know, you turn on the news every day and you hear of an act of terrorism or a motor vehicle accident or whatever the case may be. So these programs are really derived and came from the fact that people in the public don't necessarily have access to the training that they would need in order to respond from one of these disasters. So at the end of the day, preparedness is obviously key, preventing disasters from happening. But disasters will happen either way. So our programs help prepare New Jersey public officials as well as the general public on what to do until help arrives. So it offers them basic programs such as how to call 911, when to call 911, how to do bleeding control, how to manage a scene, and basically give a comfort level for the general public in order to respond. So we want to encourage people in the year 2019 not to walk away to emergency. You know, they're the first ones on the scene. If you call 911, yes, police, fire, and EMS are going to show up. But depending on where you live in the country or where you live in the state of New Jersey, that could take anywhere between 2, 3, 5, or upwards of 10 minutes. So we want to train people to do the basics in order to save lives. So they play a crucial role in the emergency response system. And they also are crucial in saving lives, because the sooner that they apply the life-saving techniques that they learn in our programs, the better it is for patient outcomes, as well as assisting emergency responders. So, you know, if we get there and there's a mass casualty incident, whether it be a terrorist attack, bus accident, agricultural disaster, whatever the case may be, people there start initiating that care. So they're able to triage patients, identify patients that have life-threatening injuries and emergencies, and direct the emergency services to them when they arrive. So at the end of the day, the less of a burden there is on EMS, fire, and police, the more we're able to assist the more critically injured.
Great. So the citizen really is a first responder, and this program is, it sounds like it's perfect for them. How do you engage those different audiences? You know, what are some of the target audiences you offer this program to? Is it just schools, or is it, you know, others in the community?
So that's a good question. So, you know, one of the obstacles that people have anytime, myself in my own personal life, is that financial obstacle to training. So what we realize over the last couple of years, if you build it, they will come. What we do is we try and offer our programs to exactly that, the general public. So who have we been marketing our programs to? Schools, houses of worship, general public, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, YMCA, community groups, community emergency response teams. So these are all people that have a place in society and are in the high profile areas where, again, a natural disaster or man-made disaster may actually happen. So we target the general public with a focus on places where there are mass gatherings.
We talk a lot about preparedness being a shared responsibility and that the whole community is involved in our state's preparedness. And I think this is one of the programs that shows that, you know, they really do play an important role, and educating them on what they should be doing when something happens is very important. So the Until Help Arrives program, you mentioned the five different modules. Stop the Bleed is one of those. Could you talk about how the Stop the Bleed module in the Until Help Arrives program differs from the Stop the Bleed program in general? Are they the same thing? You know, how does that work?
They're similar, Jim. They're a little different. The Stop the Bleed module in Until Help Arrives is a little more basic than the National Stop the Bleed program. In the Stop the Bleed module in Until Help Arrives, we cover tourniquet use and direct pressure, how to identify what a life-threatening bleeding looks like. In the National Stop the Bleed program, we cover wound packing, bandaging, chest and belly wounds, things like that. We spend a little more time on hands-on in the National Stop the Bleed program versus Until Help Arrives.
And in the Stop the Bleed program, your audience isn't just looking at a PowerPoint. They're actually participating in those activities. So you're providing them an overview and then giving them that hands-on of what they would actually do in those situations.
That's correct. Especially in our program, the way we deliver it, we send a seasoned veteran to whatever location we're teaching at. This way, it doesn't matter who we're teaching, whether it's first responders or it's the general public. The instructor has a background in actually using these techniques to stop life-threatening bleeding. It teaches the students exactly what it looks like and how to stop it.
So, Joe, the Until Help Arrives program has five modules. Could you briefly discuss each of those modules?
You know, it starts off obviously with an introduction. During that introduction, we try and drive home a little bit about the Hartford Consensus and why we're here to do the training. Once we get through that, we explain to people that it's okay to touch somebody else, right? We're taught from when we're very young children that if we witness an accident or an emergency, that we're not supposed to touch or move the person. Well, it's just not true. It's not the case. It's okay to touch and move somebody who's injured, especially when it's a life-threatening emergency. So we discuss that in the beginning and try and get that point across. And then we talk about calling 911. Obviously, everyone knows how to pick up the phone and dial 911, but what to expect from the 911 operator and how to come up with an action plan to keep yourself safe at that emergency and help others while you're there.
Sometimes you're at a situation and you just assume someone else is going to call 911. Do you recommend that everyone should, you know, pick up the phone and dial?
That's a really good point. The program actually drives this point home. It's one of the biggest mistakes people make at an emergency is waiting too long to call 911. Everyone thinks somebody else has done it when a bunch of people witness an emergency. So we try and tell everyone, unless you know for a fact someone has called 911, pick up the phone and dial 911 and get that clock started, get us coming, so that there's no delay in life-saving techniques. It is mentioned in every module. I say it over and over again when I teach the program.
And then going through, you know, calling 911, I think the second is protect the injured from harm. What does that actually mean?
That means, like I said earlier, it's okay to actually touch somebody and move somebody if they're having a life-threatening emergency. What I mean is actually moving them away from harm. We talked about first responders. There's actually a new term for it. If you witness an emergency and there's a life-threatening emergency, I like to refer to the Boston Marathon bombing. There were only three people that were killed at the Boston Marathon bombing. Horrible event. Two bombs go off. There's tons of people injured, but only three people died. And the reason for that is because the people that were there when the bombs went off actually dove in and started helping the injured people around them. There's a new term for it now. It's called the immediate responder. Teaching people how to be an immediate responder is what this program is about.
One of the last modules in that is providing comfort. Is that, you know, just letting that person know you're going to be all right and giving them comfort before the first responder paramedics arrive?
Absolutely. It's important because it's morally the right thing to do. But what it does is it helps keep people's vital signs low. It helps in their long-term recovery by providing comfort to help in their long-term recovery.
That's great. So how long have you guys been doing this training and offering it to the community?
So we're all about community involvement at the end of the day. So it's our obligation as a level one trauma center in northern New Jersey to reach out to the public. So we want to make sure that we're engaged, and not just in the city of Newark, but in all of northern New Jersey, being that, again, once again, we are that level one trauma center. So that being said, you know, we do target our programs to those areas. So the whole idea behind this training is, again, to get it out to the public and use seasoned veterans to do this. So we want to make sure that we're out there. We've been doing the training for about 5 years, and the goal is to continue the training and reach out to more people, because the more people that you reach out, the better. And I kind of equate this to CPR. So 50, 60 years ago, we realized that people were dying of sudden cardiac arrest. So what did we do? The American Heart Association came out and made a CPR course. And when we encourage people in the public to take the CPR program, because the more people that are trained in CPR in the public, the better chances of survival. So there's an emphasis placed on community training. Now, moving forward to the year 2019, there's laws in New Jersey which actually require people to have CPR training. The law here in New Jersey is called Janet's Law. So basically, Janet's Law requires wherever children normally gather and congregate, and wherever there's mass gatherings, that people need to be trained in CPR and that an AED or automated external defibrillator is in place. So Janet was a girl out in Hunterdon County who unfortunately suffered sudden cardiac arrest at a cheerleading meet, and they attribute her death to people not being trained in CPR and not having an AED. So moving forward, again, back to the year 2019, you know, we've realized, which I'll let Joe talk about, the Hartford Consensus basically has identified that bleeding from trauma being the most preventable form of death, if we could go out and we could train people on bleeding control and tourniquet application and wound packing, at the end of the day, that will save lives. So whether it be a mass shooting in a school or a mall or a house of worship or just in the general public, you know, again, getting that training out there. And our hope is in the next coming years is working with our local representatives and making this law just like Janet's Law applies now.
And Joe, would you like to talk about the Hartford Consensus?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the Hartford Consensus was a series of meetings that happened after the Newtown, Connecticut shooting. After those young children were killed in an active shooter event, a bunch of really smart people got together in a series of meetings, and it was later titled the Hartford Consensus. Their recommendations were pretty simple. First, to get first responders trained in bleeding control techniques, and then using grant funding, get the equipment out to those first responders. The next step was to get civilians trained in bleeding control techniques, and again, get the equipment out to civilians. So to expand on what Dennis just mentioned, following the AHA's recommendations with CPR and training everyone in the country in CPR and having AEDs placed at establishments that will have mass gatherings, we're looking to do the same thing with bleeding control equipment and having that stationed at any public building that'll have mass gatherings, movie theaters, malls, shopping centers, things like that.
And schools, I think that's Dennis, that's where we really had the introduction. The New Jersey Department of Education sat down with you to talk about some of the opportunities that we can, you know, start training school administrators and folks involved with schools. What are some of the projects that you've done in New Jersey that relate to schools and training some folks in the Stop the Bleed and Until Help Arrive program?
Listen, as we speak, within the last 2 weeks, you know, there's been several shootings in schools, fortunately not here in New Jersey, but throughout the U.S. And we've come to the realization that we need to bring this training into schools because, as I mentioned, you turn on the news, you hear about it every day. So our goal is to not only better equip, you know, the general public, but we also want to equip schools. So, you know, we've been working with the New Jersey Department of Education School Security Subcommittee in attempting to gain funding for this program. So our eventual goal is to place bleeding control kits in all of New Jersey public schools, train teachers, train students, nurses, faculty, so on and so forth. Because again, going full circle here, as I mentioned before, you know, the sooner you apply these tools, the sooner you apply a tourniquet and do bleeding control, the better chance of patient survival. So we have offered the program, which we've received a lot of positive feedback. Last year, we offered a program up in Bergen County where most of the principals from all the Bergen County public schools went. A lot of the administrators, most police chiefs and or representatives went to the training. And that day we presented a hybrid program. It was the FEMA Until Help Arise program. And we kind of combined it with the bleeding control program. And it was attended by about 100 people. There were anywhere from, again, a faculty member all the way to a mom in the training. And like all the training that specifically Joe and our team does, we receive a lot of positive feedback. In fact, people leave our courses and they're hungry for information. So they're not only hungry for information, but they're also hungry for these kits. So training is second to none, but people leave the training and they want to know where they could get a kit and how they could train their community members. And can we come to their church and to their school? So, you know, usually we open up a class of 25 people and usually posting within an hour or two, we're up to about 100. So the problem that we have is actually trying to control the crowds, if you will. So again, getting out there, getting the kits out there, getting the training out there. And again, schools, unfortunately, is where it's going to happen and where it has been happening. Actually, about this point a year ago, a university hospital in Newark donated $32,000 worth of bleeding control kits for all of Newark Public Schools. So all of Newark Public Schools now all have bleeding control kits. The number of kits are determined by the size of the school, the population of the school. And we're currently in the process of training all Newark Public School staff in bleeding control. So in the event something does happen in a Newark public school, they're now better prepared. So as far as our knowledge, we're the first hospital in the state to offer bleeding control kits to a public school district. And Newark has a very large public school district. And from investigations, also realizing that we're the only hospital in the nation who actually has done that. So a lot of other cities and a lot of other trauma centers reach out to us after that training, wanting to duplicate what we did here in New Jersey and here in Newark. We want to be on the forefront. So we want all of our public school teachers and all of our students to be trained in bleeding control. So it would be nice to be on the forefront of this.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you mentioned, you know, getting the kits in schools, and it doesn't just have to be for an active shooter situation or another tragic event. You know, if a student falls off the bleachers and breaks their leg or has a wound, this kit could essentially support, you know, the response to that before the first responders arrive as well.
Yeah, Jim, that's a really good point. Not just the kit, but the programs themselves teach techniques that you can use, not just for bleeding control, but for positioning an injured person or somebody who's having difficulty breathing. There's a lot to the program that's using very simple techniques that a lay person can do and easily remember that will definitely make a difference in somebody's life if they're dying.
You're teaching teachers, you're teaching community members. They're going to bring this training wherever they are. So no matter where the situation happens, they'll be able to address that situation if they need to.
Absolutely, Jim. And just looking at the numbers here, you know, New Jersey has 691 public school districts with about 110,000 teachers, totaling about 3,000 public schools. So if we could train every employee that works in these schools and do the outreach, these people will be in the community. So if Johnny falls off of his bicycle or somebody does fall off the bleachers, you know, we will have trained over 100,000 people. So again, that will help save lives at the end of the day.
And they don't have to have a Turner kit or a bleeding control kit, right? When you offer the training to these individuals, say they're at the park and something does happen, is there improvised bleeding control techniques that you train on?
Absolutely. You always have tools with you to control life-threatening bleeding, and that's your hands. Applying direct pressure to a life-threatening bleed is the first step in stopping life-threatening bleeding. So getting people to understand that and use that technique as the first technique, the go-to technique in controlling life-threatening bleeding, they start to understand that. And, you know, just saying things like that in the beginning of a program gets people to understand the importance of the program. A lot of times, especially when we're teaching an establishment where people are actually forced to go to the training, they may not want to be there. When they walk in and we have them for 5 minutes and we make them understand that this training is not just for work, but it'll work at home as well, it grabs their attention and they apply themselves a little better. And we've had a great turnout on the training.
And again, bringing it back to CPR. So what we teach now is bad CPR is better than no CPR. So we're doing the same concept. So you have the choice to do something. So almost anybody could apply direct pressure. And yeah, and giving them alternatives. So nothing replaces a commercial grade tourniquet. Nothing replaces a commercial grade wound packing material. But there are common household items that you could use. And we do review that in the course. And one of the advantages of us when we come out and we do the program, we're bringing seasoned instructors. So we're bringing EMTs and paramedics that have routinely in their career have seen penetrating trauma and motor vehicle accidents and terrorist attacks as well. So we take that knowledge, we bring that back to our students, and we give them that hands-on time with an actual tourniquet. And we bring something we call a sausage, which actually has a laceration and a small gauge and a large gauge bullet hole. So giving the people the hands-on time. As you mentioned before, you know, the program is a PowerPoint-led program, but we like to say we spend 51% of our time with the hands-on and 49% lecturing. So at the end of the day, bleeding control, direct pressure, and then making these tools available in the public. In fact, many people, and Jim, I know you and I were talking about this before, bleeding control kits are starting to be installed, you know, nationally. You know, they're going up in your malls, they're going up in your airports. A lot of municipal buildings are starting to carry them now. I talked about the Newark Public School project that we did. These kits are becoming more prominent. Again, putting these kits out there, just like we put AEDs out there, and people are going to see these kits now, and they're going to want to know about this bleeding control training. And again, all this is a trickle-down effect in training the general public.
So, Dennis, I know we had talked about previously Georgia and them being at the forefront of getting into schools, you know, offering this training and getting some kits in schools. Could you talk a little bit about what they're doing and then that national trend we're seeing right now?
Absolutely. So again, you know, you turn on the news every day and you hear about a shooting in a school. So Georgia was a lead in the nation on this. And Georgia, 2 years ago, they worked with their local representatives and they actually made it law in Georgia that each school has to have X amount of people trained in bleeding control. And they also supplied bleeding control kits to all Georgia public schools once the people have received the training. Because as we discussed before, the training is excellent, but if you don't give the tools to the providers, they're going to have limited bleeding control capability. So there are other states throughout the nation that are doing this. Arkansas is also looking at this. This is a trend. Again, all is part of the Hartford consensus. So getting that training, putting it in schools, and getting the kits where they need to be is a national trend. And here in New Jersey, we hope to be doing that by a year from now. We hopefully will have trained a significant amount of people, whether it be direct hands-on training or a trainer-trainer methodology. Because as much as we want to go out and train everybody in New Jersey, that's not realistic. So not only do we offer the training, but we will go out to different organizations and different school districts and for-profit, non-profit agencies and actually do bleeding control train the trainer programs where we go in, we give them the actual training program because some of them have never taken it before, and then we give them instructor materials. So we do that on a general public level. And then we also created a program called Bleeding Control for New Jersey First Responders. So basically what that program does is that kind of highlights bleeding control. So, you know, tourniquet application is a tourniquet application. Wound packing is wound packing. But what the New Jersey First Responder Bleeding Control Program teaches is exactly that. Things that are specific to New Jersey. Transporting a patient to a level one trauma center, talking about level two trauma centers, identifying where the level one and level two trauma centers in New Jersey are, and really driving the point home that yes, you know, your immediate responders and your first responders are the lifeline, but that only goes so long. So once EMS gets there or the patient arrives to the hospital via private auto, which by the way, looking at all of the active shooter incidents that have happened throughout the US, specifically Las Vegas, most people actually don't go to the hospital via EMS. They'll go private auto. They'll be thrown in the bed of a pickup truck. They will Uber. They will take a car and actually self-arrive at the emergency department. So what we teach first responders, we also teach in the lay public person, is bringing that patient to a trauma center. So trauma centers are equipped with the staff, the surgeons, and everything that's on board in order to do this. So all this training, including the schools, the public education, first responder, immediate responders, at the end of the day is about saving lives and getting that information out there.
Great. Dennis, Joe, thanks for being here today. If you have a website that you could provide our listeners on where they can find more information, that'd be much appreciated.
Absolutely. So all listeners are definitely encouraged to visit our website, which is www.uhnj.org/CTC, Cat Tom Cat. Anybody listening can also gain information on the Stop the Bleed program by going to bleedingcontrol.org. There's information you could print out. There's self-directed learning on there as well. There are where to purchase bleeding control kits. The Hartford Consensus could also be found on bleedingcontrol.org. And then the FEMA Until Help Arise program can be found on their website. The FEMA Until Help Arise program can be self-directed learning where the end user can go online and take the program. In my opinion, I think Joe will agree that, you know, actually having that hands-on time with an experienced instructor is the most important part. So the FEMA website, bleedingcontrol.org, or University Hospital, Newark, New Jersey, all the information on the programs that we offer there. And Jim, it's not just that. You know, we offer quantitative and qualitative fit testing. We offer emergency management classes. We offer EMT renewal classes, CPR, AED, first aid. And also, if there was a program that a certain agency wanted, we could come up with a custom program for that, which we've done many times before. You know, when Ebola came out, a lot of people needed the donning and the doffing training. So we came up with a program for donning and doffing for Ebola. So there's always that just-in-time training as well.
All right, great. Thanks. I appreciate you guys coming in. And all links will be available on our website. Thank you for listening.
All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.